From KCRW Santa Monica and KCRW.com, it's The Treatment. Welcome to The Treatment from my house on a Saturday. It's Elvis Mitchell. My guests have brought us the first season of the heretofore unknown Sherman Showcase, and it's returning on June 19th, for the Sherman Showcase Black History Month Spectacular in June. I'm joined by the creators and stars of Sherman Showcase, Bashir Salahuddin and Diallo Riddle. Guys, thanks so much for being here. Thanks for doing this.
Thank you so much for having us. This is a real treat, real honor.
I've dreamed of coming on The Treatment forever, so this is a dream come true.
Well, we got to get you guys some new dreams.
Elvis, we've had to change our dreams so many times, man. We can't change them again.
Well, you turned June into Black History Month, so I think we can't ask any more dream-wise of you than that. But I guess I want to start this off by asking, did you guys choose doing a take on Soul Train because it's basically, or at one point, it was all things to black people. It was a talk show. It was a game show. It was political. It dealt with culture and politics. Is that one of the things that made this basically a fait accompli for you?
Well, you know, I'll say this. I don't think that was actually the plan at all. If anything, this came out of we had been performing song and dance routines on Late Night with Jimmy Fallon before he took over the Tonight Show. And one time we just had a conversation. Wouldn't it be so much fun if we could do this all the time, like on a show that we create? Because we were always pitching songs that were edgier than Jimmy or NBC really wanted to do. So this was the vehicle that we thought would best allow us to do something that involved both comedy and music, you know, from the beginning.
Yeah, I think if anything, there was, you know, we obviously, we weren't really TV viewers in the 60s, you know, because we weren't born. But I do think that the variety format for us was very attractive. It definitely allowed us to, you know, explore all the different disciplines that we had been developing, you know, in our time at Fallon and in the years prior when we had our own sketch comedy show on YouTube and then the stage show. And so the idea that, you know, we could do something that, you know, had music, had comedy, had bits, had interview segments, but ultimately all of it in the prism of comedy. There were so many other things. I think the Muppet Show actually is a huge inspiration. The idea that you could have this sort of wild cast of crazy characters and then you could live both on stage with them and also get lots of comedy from what's going on behind the scenes. Even something like the Larry Sanders Show provided a bit of a blueprint for us as well. So there were a lot of different sources for us in terms of how we felt like we wanted to create this show. And there was a lot of stuff to choose from.
Yeah, I guess part of it too is that when you mentioned the Muppet Show, that was basically a show that was its own universe, and Sherman Showcase is its own universe in its way, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, like, if anything, this show gives us the opportunity to create probably one of the most broad, you know, universes that we've ever been able to create. I mean, like, we always say that we do fake movie trailers for movies that we want to make, and we create songs that we wish someone else had written, and we, you know, really get the chance to do almost every type of, it doesn't even have to always be comedic, truthfully. It's whatever we ever wanted to create.
Yeah.
It's like having like the biggest canvas and an infinite box of markers to draw on it.
When we first met, I remember the first things we talked about, we ended up talking for an entire dinner about the Marvin Gaye Trouble Man album. And
oh, so good.
Yes, but also very kind of specific and era specific. And what's so great about the show too, in terms of the music, and I don't want to give too much away for the Black History Month spectacular in June, but each song is not a parody. I mean, it exists as an actual musical piece. And I've said to you that you go from these songs that are like basically these two chord pieces that would be almost classic 80s R&B pop to more complex stuff. And that's a big part of this too, that the music really lives in its own world as well.
You know, we always wanted to make the music good enough that DJs would actually want to play it. You know, a lot of times you can tell that the comedy came first and the song came second. With ours, we really wanted you to feel like the music was there and we just put some more, slightly more absurd lyrics into it than an actual artist might have said. And you know, it's often said it's really hard to come up with a band name that's too absurd, because music goes to those absurd places. In our case, yeah, these are not parody songs. We really wanted to make songs that sound exactly like the genre that they're supposed to represent, and then just make our tweaks and just to make it just slightly funny. A classic example is that there's a song in there for a game show called Get Your Boy. And the game show theme song could have just been 5 seconds long. But we were like, what if it's like a Snap song? You know, like there was all these popular like Southern rap songs that were part of the Snap genre, like around 2005, 2006, like when ringtones were really popular. So we tried to make our theme song for Get Your Boys sound every bit as good as a T-Pain song from 2005.
And just to add to that, I would say the thing that I'm really, really proud of is that it allows us as two Black creators to show the depth and diversity of our own interests. You know, one of my favorite things when we were touring with season one of Sherman's, I would always talk to folks all over any place we were in Austin, we were in New York, different places. And I would always ask them, like, what are your favorite shows? And so many different people, a lot of Black folk especially, they had such a diverse palette. And yet I would think that when you watch television, you don't always get that. You don't always get that these characters are hard to put in a box. And so with Sherman Showcase, I love that on its surface, it actually looks like something that could be a stereotype, like a send-up of Soul Train, et cetera. But once you sort of peel back the layers and look at it, you go, wait a second, these guys have tributes to Serge Gainsbourg. These guys have tributes to spaghetti westerns. These guys have tributes to Muppets in Space. It just allows us as two creators to say, we have all these incredible, crazy, interesting, completely unaligned things that we're into, as do many, many people, and especially many Black people. And on this show, we sort of like put them all in the same toy box, and we allow you to play with any of these pieces that you want to play with. And for me, that is something that I've been wanting to do my whole life, to be able to do something that wasn't easily definable, but to challenge the viewer between sketches to go, wait a second, what is this source material? What is that source material? I just think that's a reflection of who we are as people, because I can tell you, like, Dial and I will probably spend equal amounts of time watching political shows as watching goofy 60s movies. And I don't think we're unique in that, but I do think that the presentation of characters, and especially Black characters, has never been that layered on shows. And so we're excited to be part of a new wave of shows that do show you that complexity.
It's the treatment. We're talking, I guess, metaphors and magic markers with my guests, the stars and creators of Sherman Showcase, Bashir Salahuddin and Diallo Riddle. But one of the things you were just hitting on a second ago, Bashir, which I think I respond to, that the show works in two ways, that the performance is really, like acting and dance is really specific, but also at a certain point as a person of color, the world tends to take on a kind of a surrealist taint. Mm. And the fact that there's something slightly surreal about everything, sometimes not quite absurd, but only slightly surreal, and sometimes full-blown extreme absurd, but mm-hmm. at least something slightly absurd in every piece on Sherman Showcase, isn't there?
I think part of that is also enhanced, some of that surreality is enhanced, you know, by the production design. We were really hard on, you know, ourselves to make a show that would require us to use all the tools in our toolbox. And I think that we also have a great partner in Matt Piedmont, who was another SNL guy who came out of there and made some great stuff. But, you know, he and Giles, his DP, and the production designer, they all really came together to also be hard on themselves and to challenge themselves with the way that it looks, so that, you know, one of the things we had, for example, and I hope this answers the question, is like, you know, our idea was like, you know, if you're flipping channels, you know, for me, I always tell people, like, if I'm flipping channels and I'm on a scene of The Sopranos that I've never seen, just by the way it looks, I'm like, oh, this must be The Sopranos. It has the color palette. It has the look, it has the feel of a Sopranos episode. And for us, Sherman Showcase, we wanted a similar, you know, bit of like identification. We wanted to have colors that are very specific to our universe, and the camera work and the lighting is very specific to our universe. So that if you come upon Sherman Showcase, you're like, oh, this must be Sherman Showcase. Nothing else in the world looks like that. And I think a lot of that color palette you're talking about does help us push the surreal elements. You know, I think we want to be grounded, but we also want to go into space too.
Yeah, we feel like between the colors on the clothes and also the animation that we have in a lot of episodes of Sherman Showcase, that you'll always be able to see just sort of a bright, beautiful color palette. And that's one of the things that we feel like would make it stand out, be colorful and fun, but still subversive.
Well, one of the things that's so much fun about too, I guess, is I feel like what you guys said was, we're going to create a show dealing with Black culture in which we don't stop to explain anything to viewers. And it demands you, if you're just tuning in, if you're like flicking past channels or whatever, that you go, wait, what is this? Rather than have it spoon fed to you.
Yeah.
You get the feeling that sometimes in these executive pitches, they go, well, people aren't going to get it unless you explain it.
Mm-hmm.
But audiences are smarter than that.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think that we like went out of our way to, you know, just really write a show that we would think was funny. You know, we never had a debate about, well, gosh, if this scene references the Berry Gordy classic, The Last Dragon, will everybody watching get it? I think our goal was to make it funny to anybody watching, but also if you've seen The Last Dragon, then it's just got a whole extra layer of something to enjoy.
Yeah, I agree with that entirely. And I think part of that is because, you know, as creators, we've had other projects in the past that were bold and were avant-garde, but that we, you know, probably weren't as sure as ourselves, and we weren't as sure that we were right. And so we would get notes or we would get pushback. We would go, well, you know, we want to be good creators. Maybe we should take all this stuff to heart. And I think we had to have our own evolution and our own personal graduation. And I think every showrunner, every show creator has to have that moment where they go, you know what? I or we need to be the people most aware of what this thing needs to look like and how it needs to perform. And though you can get notes about it, though you can get opinions about it and you can get advice about it, if you don't know yourself what it's supposed to be and what it's supposed to look like, I think you put yourself in a position to create something that is unrecognizable. And I'm very thankful that we had, in some ways, a very tough road to get to Sherman Showcase, so that by the time it was time to do a Sherman Showcase, both of us were 100% sure of what this show needed to be. We stuck to our guns, and I think the proof is in the pudding.
No, that's a really great point to make, because I do feel like the show radiates, and it's almost parody in your performance as Sherman Bashir. Mm-hmm. It's this insane, almost delusional confidence.
Yeah, I love it. You know, a lot of people don't they don't believe me when I tell them, but I really did base a lot of Sherman on Krusty the Clown from The Simpsons, which is another one of our favorite shows, because he's so inconsistent. He's so out of control. But yet there is a through line that anything that hurts his ratings is bad and anything that helps his ratings is good. That's like the only thing that he's been able to sort of wrap his mind around. And he's also the consummate showman. But ultimately, his goal is like, I'm going to give these people as much entertainment as humanly possible, even though I might have to be inconsistent and completely wild to do it. And I think with Sherman, for me, it's just so much fun to play a character who has, in some ways, absolutely no moral compass. You know, I think we say one year he could be voting for the Democrats. The next year he's probably pushing the Republicans. Like, it doesn't matter. You know, I think that, you know, as people, you always want to have obviously a moral foundation and an ethical base. But I think for TV show characters, there is the opportunity to really explore other parts of yourself and other things that even if you personally don't like them, you go, God, this was so much fun to be able to do.
Well, gosh, just as a character creation, though, and you would be really hitting on this, not to have you weigh in on the two, Diallo, there's some points where Sherman just kind of realizes, oh, wait, I'm the host of a show. So I could be hit by a lightning bolt of authority that will disappear by the time he gets to the end of the sentence.
You know, Sherman, who, like Bashir said, he wears all of his emotions on his sleeve. He is absolutely amoral, and that's kind of the person that you need at the head of this kind of ship. And I will actually say, just in regards to the spectacular, the character that I play on the show, Dutch, he does put out a lot of fires that Sherman never knows about. Sort of a weird sort of relationship there that is a little bit like our relationship in real life, only in the sense that, like, I feel like because we are a two-headed beast of sorts, there are things that Bashir can take care of, and then there are things that I will take care of, and somehow the ship actually makes it safely to port.
We'll take a break. We're talking to the creators and stars of Sherman Showcase. Bashir Salahuddin, who plays Sherman, and Diallo Riddle, who plays just about everybody else on the show. It's a treatment. There's more to come. Stay with us.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
Welcome back. It's a talk about Sherman Showcase Black History Month Spectacular in June on IFC and AMC, all the season basic cable, I guess. My guests are the stars and the creators of Sherman Showcase, Bashir Salahuddin and Diallo Riddle. But this is one of the things I want to get to, too, that there is, at some point, and we were talking about this in the first half a little bit, there's a kind of arrogance that comes out of so many of the characters.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wonder where that comes from for you guys as writers. So many of them, and we talked about this a little bit before, like when Marlon Wayans just in the first season just kind of is almost possessed at some point in character terms. And we see it in what Terrence J does in this episode. And I just want to have you guys talk about somebody who at some point just has to speak their mind in a piece. That's really, really a funny idea to me.
You know what's interesting about that is we live in a world now where people know that everything that they say will be, if it's even remotely controversial or even perhaps just lightly interesting, it will be picked up and potentially amplified by the echo chamber that is the internet, the blogs, Twitter, et cetera, et cetera. One thing that our show does is it time travels, right? We love the idea that our show goes into the future, it goes into the past. I mean, we really created something that we're very proud about how unbound it is. But what's nice about going in the past is that you're in an era where people didn't necessarily get taken to task at all. And they certainly didn't have their private conversations broadcast. And so what I'm trying to say is that I do think you have a lot more personalities that are really just raw and unchecked. And I think we kind of have fun with that. We have fun with the idea of seeing what a Prince-like character was like, you know, in the 80s when he was the king of the world and could do anything. And he could tell Sherman what Sherman needed to program and Sherman was just going to do it, right? Or if you go and you find like even like the David Ruffin sketch we do, where all these guys are in a room together and they're just tearing each other apart. But it's so much fun to think about how Motown stars would have been together and how they would have played with each other. So I do think that our show affords us, you know, the ability to have characters be really, really candid, because historically, you know, a lot of folks, you know, before people found out what people were kind of like, I mean, there were some real big, bold personalities, and we kind of have fun with that.
Yeah, because I think what's interesting about that, too, is that these people sort of feel like they have to sort of let people know what they're thinking. And in that sketch you're talking about, The Temptations 11, you can sort of feel all these years of sort of microaggressions that were taken out of them, they're responding to.
Or in some of their cases, it's just macroaggressions. Let's be clear.
I got to tell you, my favorite part of that is when Gladys Knight is just lightly critical of Diana Ross and Diana Ross just snaps. It's just like, this is so silly. And it's all over the top, but it was so much fun to play those
characters. You know, what's actually interesting, Elvis, is that we're working on a John Legend Father's Day special for ABC right now. And in that context, we had a Zoom set up with Stevie Wonder. And we, you know, there was some debate among the producers of the show, like, would Stevie say some of the raunchier stuff that we had written for him? And I had to remind him, I was like, you know, this is the same Stevie Wonder who had to put up with a young Berry Gordy. You know what I mean? Like, I was like, I imagine he's heard and seen just some really questionable stuff in his time. And sure enough, when we pitched him what we thought were the racy lines, Stevie had a way of making him racier. And I was just like, everybody was like crying, laughing. But like, I was like, this is Stevie. He was on Motown, guys. Like, he's, he's seen some stuff.
He was little Stevie on Motown. He was like a 14-year-old prodigy on Motown. You know what's crazy about that, Elvis? It kills me how many people are so important to Black history. Usually when you think of somebody who's important to history, you know, you think of them as somebody who passed away. But when it comes to Black culture, and especially when it comes to Black music, everybody's pretty much still here. You know, so there have been, you know, there've been some folks we've lost, but it's so weird to watch like a documentary from the 70s or the 80s, or, you know, you watch about like the thing we watch with the Questlove. He's doing some work around this Harlem Music Festival that used to happen. So many of those people are still alive and thriving, and they absolutely have hilarious and wonderful stories. So it's kind of cool that living history is something that we have a lot of access to.
Well, we're talking with the guys who could be doing their own version of the Secret Museum, but this on AMC and IFC this time around. It's the creators of Sherman Showcase Black History Month Spectacular in June. We're out of time. It takes long to say the title. But I guess it's stars and creators of Sherman Showcase, Bashir Salahuddin and Diallo Riddle.
By the way, Elvis, we thought that was so funny that we would have a Black History Month special in June. Like, that was sort of like the joke. It was like the Black History Month Spectacular in June. Like, we thought that was really funny. And then at some point, the world was like, no, we're actually going to make sure that this is extremely relevant. Like, I mean, they're all kind of, you know, unrelated to our show, who are like, yeah, we're making June Black History Month. And I'm like, guys, we really want our joke to hit harder.
Yeah.
Well, there's so many jokes in the show that found their own weird truth. Like, there's a one point where Sherman goes, well, y'all don't know what month it is anyway.
Mm-hmm. And- it's true. That's true. Or, like, even to add some the kente cloth. We have a whole music video about adding kente cloth. And literally 4 days before we were going to drop it, you know, Nancy Pelosi and some Democrats kneeled and they were wearing kente. You know, like, we wrote this song almost a year ago. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, this was not, like, we planned this. But it's, like you just said, the universe, in this particular instance, the universe actually caught up to us.
People were like, oh, how could you guys have ever known that kente would be in the news the week that your special was coming out? I'm like, obviously we couldn't. You know, we're not psychics, but we always have written what we thought was funny and what was relevant to us. And in some ways, the fact that kente is now something that, you know, a lot more people know about is proof that the just almost like the world is opening up to what the Black perspective is on life. Like, it's at this moment where it's almost like, oh, you know, maybe Blacks haven't been making this up about the police all this time. You know, like, we're in a new place. And I think it's dumb luck that we actually have the special coming out on Friday, which is not to say the special is going to solve the world's problems, but it will give people an hour.
But what if it did, Diallo? What if it did?
Well, then they're going to have to pay us a lot more money. That's a big task.
That's true.
I think you kind of played your cards wrong in that respect. And anyway, I just want to remind people that the show's going to be on June 19th, this coming Friday. But there's so much stuff to talk to you guys about. My gosh. And one of the things we're kind of touching on, you actually both been hitting on, is that the show is really finally about time. Mm. And I mentioned this to you before, Bashir, that, you know, Sherman never changes in some way. He's kind of always been caught in the time loop. And that idea that Sherman is kind of the sort of like the fixed North Star mm-hmm. in all of this sort of absurdity is a really, really funny concept.
Yeah, I think that, you know, the best TV characters, in my opinion, never change. I think audiences need that. They need that anchor. So it's practical in two ways. Number one, it allows us to create a character that we don't have to evolve. It's not a serialized show where season five, Sherman is a lot more introspective and inward looking. Like, no, he's the same. He's crazy as always, you know? And I think that, you know, same thing with like Al Bundy. Al Bundy's the same season one as he is season 8500. The other thing though is, again, it kind of goes to iconography. I think if we keep Sherman the same, and sort of within that flipping channels world, no matter when you see him, you know that Sherman. And so for us, we wanted to make sure that we created something iconic, and part of doing that is to make sure that he was fixed.
Yeah, we actually had a long debate about, like, well, in the 80s, should he have a Jerry curl and maybe like a tight fade by the... I think that, you know, Bashir was right when he said, you know, I see this guy as being sort of stuck in 1978 for the rest of his life. And, you know, in terms of how he's styled. And I think that actually worked out quite well because, hey, it actually cuts. It means that we don't have to, like, go into hair and makeup every time we change the year. We can just pop into a year.
Mm-hmm.
But also, like you said, yeah, you always know that, oh, yeah, that's Sherman, a guy who, you know, sort of had his last gasp of real understanding what was cool was in the late 70s, which by extension is kind of true of Don Cornelius. Like, when Don Cornelius was interviewing like Ludacris in 2004, he didn't think his heart was in it the way Marvin Gaye in the 70s.
Yeah.
Like, those are people on the same page. Like, I'd love to see Don Cornelius talk to Migos, you know?
Yeah.
Like, that's not going to be two people on the same planet.
He was a little bit like, you could tell he was a little less into it than he was introducing like Sherelle, in which case he couldn't believe he had Sherelle. He was like, oh my God, we got Sherelle.
And by the way, that was probably the last time Don Cornelius was like, really, like, when Taboo Records was putting out Sherelle and Alexander O'Neill, like,
yeah,
like,
hey,
the young cats are doing it different. But in the 90s.
But I like that. I want Sherman. I mean, that's one thing I like about Sherman is that his tastes kind of peaked in 77 and they ain't changed. And so even though, you know, our hope is that we do something for all the audience, ironically enough, for the character of Sherman, he doesn't like probably half the stuff he puts out. And he's vocal about it.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Freddie Jackson, that breath of fresh air. Oh, anyway, yeah. I guess what I was going to say, too, is that the other side of the characters, one person being extremely sort of deluded and having to say what they want to say, is that there are often so many characters on the show who are so wounded, and we can hear how wounded they are in their responses to that kind of those bursts of arrogance.
Yeah, I think. Well, I'm actually curious. Who do you think is?
I mean, I was thinking of the Mary J. when he was talking about that. I was thinking,
Mary J. Exactly. Or any of the sequences with Charette. Yeah, I mean, but at some point, everybody's kind of like, wait, what are you saying? I mean, there is this kind of fascinating dynamic of almost abuser and abused in every single conversation in the show. You know, every time Frederick Douglass walks into that apartment, you know, he's coming in like a home invader.
Yeah.
And that kind of wrestling for somebody demanding to be heard versus somebody going, well, I'm here too. Why are you walking all over me? I mean, that's that sort of, I think, character dynamic is really interesting to me.
I love that. I love that we have a show where all the characters have raw emotions. Everybody in some ways feels like everybody else is out to get them. Everybody feels like, you know, even in, and one of the things that Diallo, because Diallo's wife, Brittany, is our choreographer, but also when we had our dances, we really wanted them to represent more than just moving bodies. We had these people audition with comedy sketches. We made them do improv. We, you know, in our show, the dancers do a lot of acting. And so, but even there in the dancing and in some of the stuff they do, you still see people jockeying for the spotlight. And I think that type of like aggressiveness actually at its end gives us a much better TV show where everywhere you look, you have interesting things happening on screen.
Yeah, I just, you know, what's interesting is that, and this is one of the reasons why I love the treatment, because it's actually truly thought-provoking. I think that, just to go back to your earlier point, every single character on the show is in their own way wounded. So, you know, like you bring Raid, who's sort of our stand-in for Prince. We always said that we had created a Marvel cinematic universe for black music. So if the real world had Prince, then who's the Prince in our world? It'll be Sharade. You see our stand-in for Prince sort of like watching rap music, and he's just like, but I play 27 instruments and I compose, you know, masterpieces, and this guy got up here and like rapped the alphabet, you know, like, and by the way, I'm a huge lover of hip hop, but that had to confuse somebody as brilliant and as genius as Prince. So really, I think it can't be overstated. Like, if you love music and you love having a conversation about music, I mean, several times in our career, Bashir and I have just said, wow, what if we just did a podcast about music and just talked about new music, old music, just music. Like, it's weird that music is something that you can talk about, not sing about, but talk about. And it's just always fascinating on every level. And in a way, that's what Sherman Showcase is. It's a conversation about music from people who love all different types of music, and specifically black music.
I'm really proud about that. I'm proud that our show caters to hopefully everybody. You know, I was watching it with some of my younger cousins. They're about 13, 14, and they were really giggling and enjoying it, and everything that came on they liked. But I love that our show is also a home for the music nerds. You know, I think some of my favorite TV shows work on that level. Like, if you're a casual viewer, they're funny. If you happen to have some nerddom, and for me, nerddom just means you have an incredible affinity for and love of one specific type of thing or one specific type of genre or whatever. If you love music, if you're a music head, our show has such deeper jokes for you.
Well, we're out of time. My guests who have taken the sting out of nerddom are the stars and creators of Sherman Showcase.
We had to take the sting out because we're just looking out for those nerds, you know. It's definitely not us. It's not us.
Somebody had to do it. Somebody had to do it.
Well, it's Public Radio, so of course none of them are listening. Of course, Bashir Salahuddin and Diallo Riddle, our recording engineer, who came in on Saturday. Thank you so much. And also mixes and edits the show because she's got way too much to do. It's Kat Yore. To better days, everybody. It's The Treatment. To catch up on past episodes of The Treatment, go to kcrw.com or listen on your smartphone with KCRW's mobile apps, or subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or if you listen to podcasts. The Treatment is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica.